Our God has been so wild lately. He doesn't seem to listen, he doesn't obey my commands, and we can't even bribe him with treats.
He's gotten so out of hand, he may even have to be put down.
God is not the problem here. The problem is the people who want to be the leader of the pack. We reintroduce God. We retrain people. You're listening to The God Whisperers. Listening to the world famous God Whisperers, bringing fun back to funk once again. Craig D'Onofrio.
I'm Bill Swirla.
Should we listen to this a little more?
You know, this music just invites the white man's overbite.
It does. It really does. I'm getting all funky here.
All right.
It's kind of got, you know, a little bit of that, like, glorious Rocky sound there with the brass and everything.
A little bit. I
want to go run up some steps now.
or at least fire up the Stairmaster. I don't know. Man, that brings back the 70s in so many ways.
Big time. Big time. I think we should, next time we record, we should wear, like, Huggy Bear kind of outfits from Starsky and Hutch. I think that would be good.
Grow mullets. We'll have to grow mullets.
I'm Craig D'Onofrio.
We've already done that.
Oh,
Craig.
Yeah, you're Bill
Senior
Swirla.
Moment. I'm Bill Swirla.
Yeah, I'm just having fun pushing buttons here.
And we have a guest.
Hey, we do. We've got a great day ahead of us. We are doing a movie review with the Reverend Ted Geese. Welcome to the program, Ted.
Ted.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, live from the Great White North.
That's right.
How's it going, eh?
Well, going real good, eh?
Nice. Nice, man. You said it like a native.
Yep.
That was impressive.
I worked for a Canadian company for a while. I went up to Toronto for training for like 2-3 weeks, and I came back and I couldn't stop saying "a." It took me about a month to stop saying "a" all the time. But
you know, there are people who are kind of sponges for accents.
Yeah,
and if you, especially if you're like you really want to kind of fit in and
no,
not
I
stick
did it
out.
At first just because it was funny.
Yeah, and then it became a habit.
Then it just stuck, and it was like, don't stop it. But anyway, Ted, hey, Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. How's everything at Mount Olive Lutheran Church? Things going well?
Things are going good. Yeah, we got your regular summer things. We got VBS cooking up in the background. And,
VBS. You do VBS in Canada?
We do Vacation Bible School. Yeah, that'll be in August.
The Queen allows that.
We have a local camp as well, Lutheran camp. That's coming up soon here. And beautiful. I've got a little crew of kids. We're going to go down to the Higher Things Conference in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Oh, you're going to be doing HT3, huh?
Yeah. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, I've been kind of tracking them. HT1 just wrapped up and HT2 in Cedar Falls, Iowa. I didn't know they had enough topography in Iowa to have falls, but I'm trusting them on that.
They had to build something.
It's actually a local water park, but they're in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and so that's starting today. So I don't know when this is going to go out, but by then you'll probably be at HT3 in Fort Collins, huh?
Should be fun.
Yeah, that'd be good.
It'll probably be a lot like the Vin Tiki, which is the tiki bar we were at for the 4th of July.
I don't think it will be.
And
anything
they
like
had
that.
Falls there that, you know, they had a little
dyed
waterfall.
Blue.
No, it was only about 3-4 feet high, but it was a waterfall. I mean, it's one of those.
You just sort of stared at it while sipping your foo-foo drink. Did you get a lot of drinks with fruit and umbrellas?
I did. I have quite a swizzle stick collection going now from tiki bars, so it's pretty cool. Something I can take to Prague with us. Swizzle sticks.
Yeah, right.
It's easy. Most
they don't plug in.
Very transportable.
You don't need to get an adapter, so no. It's all good.
Yep. So today we're talking about one of the finest movies of the millennium, of the new millennium, I would say.
Wow.
I was chatting with Ted, and I had just seen this movie, and for some reason he's crazy enough to say, yes, let's review it. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, one of the most amazing movies of the 2010 decade, at least. Ted, should we go ahead and just play the trailer?
Yeah, that's a good place to start.
All right, we'll start with that. Let's fire that up. And there we go.
Anything that starts with music like that.
It's so beautiful.
To succeed in polite society, a young woman must be many things. Kind, well-read, and accomplished. But to survive in the world as we know it, she'll need other qualities.
Now the mayhem music.
And the knives. You know, the shwinking knife sound. So the rest of it's just pretty much butt kicking and stabbing.
Blood.
At this point, yeah.
Eyeballs.
Yeah, pretty much.
Good.
So, Ted, I'll give my brief review on this. I think that if you love movies like the Evil Dead series, Army of Darkness, and so forth, this will be in your wheelhouse. That's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. I'd say that this is... definitely for that like niche crowd of girls that just love Jane Austen and their boyfriends that love Army of Darkness.
You know, really, I hadn't thought about it, but it,
the
it
ultimate really, date movie.
It really captures. It's got romance. It's got zombies. I mean, what else could you want in a movie? Really?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, if you know Pride and Prejudice. Then all of the same characters are there, except now they live in this, I guess, an alternate universe where they have to fight zombies, which are kind of like just a general plague. And in this, they're kind of clever. They chit-chat and they talk and they actually set little traps and they try to, take over the world. So they're not just mindless zombies. So that's part of it. And they do this kind of thing with the young ladies. The well-to-do families send their young ladies to the Orient, to the Far East, in order to be trained in the martial arts so that they can, kick zombie butt. That's part of it. And if you're a really rich family, you go to Japan. And if you're a really poor family, I mean, as far as that goes, in the aristocracy over there in Great Britain, you would go then to China instead. It'd be the... lesser of the two places you could go. So
now this also brings in a whole other genre of martial arts movie also.
Yeah,
so,
a little
so you
bit.
Get that also your Jackie Chan fans and that sort of thing can certainly mm-hmm. enjoy this as well.
I'm fascinated by this. Yeah, I've seen at least one of the versions. There are a number of versions of Pride and Prejudice out there, and I've seen one of them, and I'm familiar enough with the Jane Austen sort of genre. It's, you know, it's like a study in British propriety. I mean, when you watch or read one of these things, you just want to become mannered, you know, where you don't just show up at somebody's door. You have to, like, give a calling card and
right,
you sit around
right.
the parlor and you sip tea. And but it's like over the top in propriety and etiquette and everything else. I can see where this is just inviting a zombification of it, you know. It's like you just have to desecrate this somehow. This is what happens when a guy gets a hold of this.
Now, this movie's written by the same guy that wrote another fine book and another fine movie, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
I saw that and couldn't make any sense out of that either. What the heck is that about?
Now, I'm hopeful. Ted told me about this. I'm hopeful. There's another book that this person's written. I'm hopeful that they're going to make a movie of this one also. It's Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, I just clicked on the wiki on this in the background. Quirk Books, right?
Yep,
Quirk Books editor Jason Rakulak, or however you say it, Rakulak, developed the idea for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. What a great title. I mean, you know, two ands. After comparing a list of, quote, popular fanboy characters like ninjas, pirates, zombies, and monkeys, with a list of public domain book titles such as War and Peace, Crime and Punishment, and Wuthering Heights. He turned the project over to writer Seth Graham Smith. Recollect called me one day out of the blue, very excitedly, and he said, all I have is this title, and I can't stop thinking about this title. And he said, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. For whatever reason, it just struck me as the most brilliant thing I've ever heard.
What can we do with Wuthering Heights? Wuthering Heights and Wookiees. I don't know. Nah, that wouldn't work.
So yeah, he's also, I guess, going to be writing Beetlejuice 2. That same writer.
Well, there you go.
Kind of interesting, Seth Graham Smith guy.
He's coming on strong. So, Ted, you actually like to give thoughtful critique to movies, which is something I don't do. I just watch a movie and I say it made me laugh or it made me cry or I hate it.
That's because you go to movies after having had three Mai Tais.
You know, the most wonderful invention in the last decade is movie theaters where they bring you drinks.
Oh, my. Yeah,
they
no,
bring
I,
you cocktails.
I went to one of these high-end premiere-type movie theaters in Los Angeles, you know, where this is like the place of the industry. And I couldn't believe the stuff they have at movies, the food.
Oh, yeah.
The open
yeah,
bar.
Go for dinner. They bring
catered
drinks.
Stuff. It's I awesome. Mean, it was just amazing.
And the nice thing is, after a drink or two, Pollock quiets down a lot too, so that's
except that's for the
like
snoring
the movie. Yeah. No, she passes out. Yeah, she's become her father. She just sleeps through movies.
Yeah,
so Ted, thoughtful review on this movie. I don't even know where to go. You did point out a few interesting things, but I don't want to ruin it for you. So what would you do with this as a pastor and someone who thinks?
So dear GW listeners,
they aren't the same.
If you happen to have seen this movie and take it, this is not an endorsement to go see it or to go find it. I think it's on Netflix or whatever. But if you happen to have seen it, maybe you will recall the scene where they end up in a church service and there's some noisy little kids sitting in front. And the lead actress, Lily James, who's playing Elizabeth Bennet, She castigates these little urchins for being noisy, and these two little girls turn around and they are zombies. They've wandered into a zombie church, and they've been listening to a zombie sermon. Apparently, all of a sudden they look up and the vicar is a zombie, and everyone there is zombie. She's the only one that isn't, and they're about to have Holy Communion. And right. What they're being told is what her guide is telling her is that, well, these ones haven't completely, totally turned into zombies because they have not eaten of human flesh. They, in fact, what they do is they have their Holy Communion in which they have pig's blood and brains in place of the elements that you would normally find in Holy Communion. And it's St. Lazarus's church. So some of this is like extraordinarily low-hanging fruit, you know, like you find like names of people from scripture that are contextually sort of fit the bill. And then you have like some actual things like you might recognize, like the, you know, sacrament of Holy Communion. Only the sacrament of the altar in this case is not what you normally get.
Pigs.
So that is something that is, you know, kind of interesting. But then on the surface of it, I guess, or underneath it, I should say, is this idea that, you know, they're having this because it's a protection to them. It gives them a way out of the horrid nature that they have found themselves in. And that's kind of an interesting element of it.
So as far as the pig brains, I mean, as a pastor, I find this to be pretty blasphemous that the Lamb of God is substituted with the swine of Christ or whatever, you know, whatever you do with it. But, you know, where how do you How do you make that into actually a Christian thought? Is there some sort of substitutionary kind of thinking that you can go with that?
Well, I don't know. Like, stories have to have their own, like, their own internal consistency, right?
Right.
One of the guys that I just loved as a movie critic is Roger Ebert, you know, from Chicago. And
oh man, he was the greatest.
He was wonderful. And one of his main things was, okay, so if you're going to criticize a movie, you need to criticize it based on its own merits and for what it is. Like, you can't compare, you know, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies against Pride and Prejudice. I mean, I suppose there's a way you could, but these are actually very different from each other. It is better to, like, look at it in view of things like Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, or we had talked about before, Army of Darkness or Evil Dead or something like that. That's actually the real genre that it's in. So there's no use in, like, you know, being a stick in the mud and saying, oh, you know, like, Star Wars isn't as good as, you know, Ingmar Bergman movies. Like, of course, these are very different things from each other. So when you look at a movie, you need to look at its internal consistency. Like, does it work for what it is? And then also to kind of think about how it all fits into its own kind of story. So, replacing the body and blood of Christ, or actually in this particular case, I guess, would be like the wafers and the wine for, you know, pig's blood and pig's brains. This is distasteful. But they're zombies. They're distasteful. And if you look at it as a maybe a metaphor of some kind, we're just like distasteful too. Like, you know, we're riddled in sin, and sin, when it is fully birthed, brings forth death. So without Christ, we are essentially zombies also. We're the walking dead, in need of being redeemed by the one who is the life everlasting.
You see what he did there? That was good. I'm impressed.
That's why we pay him the big bucks to do
that. Yeah. He actually brought a Christian theme into this.
Is this? I found one more in this genre. So you've got Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And you've mentioned Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. I found a third one, is Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters.
Yeah, we were talking about that a few minutes ago.
And oh, were you? I must have zoned out
there. Yeah,
I just taken a little nap. But is this an emerging genre of mashup movies? Is this kind of like a new form?
Well, not really. I mean, you get mashups all the time. There's actually an early one that's just really, really awesome. It's Arsenic and Old Lace. Arsenic and Old Lace is a wonderful, very clever mashup movie. So this is, a Frank Capra movie. And for my money, I like it better than It's a Wonderful Life, actually. And what he's done in it is it was originally a stage production in New York, and he made a movie version of it. But it's a mashup in that he's taking very common tropes, just the things that you would notice and know very easily from the 30s, Universal Picture horror films like Dracula and Frankenstein and stuff like that. And he would take imagery from that, styles of filmmaking from that, and he plunks it into this comedy. So basically, he's mashing up this pastiche of different kinds of genres together, and black and white, and he's like playing on all of it by casting in people like Peter Lorre into it, but then also having Cary Grant in it. And it's a wonderful kind of mashup. So Hollywood has done these mashups for a very long time, and sometimes super successfully and sometimes not as successfully, and sometimes just, you know, squarely stuck in the B film genre, like this one is. This is a B film. It's not an A grade film, that's for sure.
I was reading about the reception of the novel. And Entertainment Weekly and Library Journal and the AV Club all gave it a very high rating, AA-. Standing out on the other side is the New Yorker, which I assume that the New York being kind of a major literary publishing center, they can't accept this. But Macy Halford, however, called the book's estimated blend of 85% Austin's words and 15% Graham Smith's 100% terrible. While she admitted that the mashup may have accurately identified a subtextual theme of mystery and menace in the original novel, she still found Graham Smith's writing to be awful, singling out a passage in which Elizabeth Bennet prepares to kill Mr. Darcy over an overheard slight. So there you go. The New Yorker was not impressed with the writing. Is there something about a Jane Austen novel that just invites this treatment?
Well, I think that successful at this kind of thing, you want to find the most disparate of elements. This is, quite disparate from each other. Like you wouldn't initially think, or this wouldn't initially come to mind. I mean, I've seen a lot of zombie movies and zombie-related things over the years, although The Walking Dead is not one of my personal favorites. I only watched a couple episodes of that. But zombies are not clean and neat and tidy, and everything about Pride and Prejudice, that world, is on the surface much more neat and tidy and clean. All the manners and everything like we were talking about, and Sense and Sensibility and this whole kind of period of time. I guess in some ways you get the lurking underbelly of distastefulness that runs through it. The mother who wants desperately to marry off all of her girls instead of letting it happen in a natural course, that kind of thing. Maybe it does reveal some sort of like a seedy underbelly to the whole thing, but they are very disparate. It's not polite company to have zombies in your midst, that's for sure.
It's a little bit like somebody once identified as Midwest Nice. Midwest Nice is a kind of a formality that's practiced in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin. If you want to get a feel for it, the Coen brothers' Fargo is a study of this. This is where you never kind of really directly address the issue, even though it's obvious, so some guy's just been put through a chipper shredder and there's blood all over the place. And the policeman apologizes for blocking the driveway with the squad car. That's Midwest Nice right there. Yeah. But it's like it's passive aggression taken to an extreme art form. And I think what I'm gathering here is that what's fun about this is there's the veneer of highly mannered society the Jane Austen novels are built around, all these formalities, these manners, these rules of engagement. It's a thin veneer of civility, but underneath there's darkness, we theologically understand this, the thin veneers of religion, when you strip them away, they very often are masking the deep recesses of corrupted humanity and all the evil. So even the very best of our best, like St. Paul says in Romans, when I do good, evil lies close at hand. There's always this mixed bag of good and evil in everything that we do. And so this kind of like makes that implicit thing explicit by, all of a sudden everything is full of horrific walking dead things when the surface appears all, prim and proper and nice and orderly.
I think
you see this all over the place, too, in film. And one of the other great places you see it is in David Lynch. You've never seen any David Lynch movies, but one of the movies that he did, which was a precursor to the TV show Twin Peaks, was a movie called Blue Velvet. And again, this is not an endorsement. Don't go out and see it if you haven't seen it already.
That means there's something bad in it, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you don't want letters. No.
It's pretty dirty.
Yeah,
Ted, Pastor Ted told us to see it, so we took the youth group.
Exactly. So the opening scene for that is a classic kind of scene. So it's this, it's literally the song Blue Velvet is being played, and there's this white picket fence, and there's a guy who's watering his lawn, and he's got his little dog there, and there's a fire truck going by, and there's the fireman waving off of the red fire truck, and there's a blue sky, everything is awesome. And then the guy has a heart attack, the guy in the yard with the hose, and he falls down. And he's clutching onto the hose, and the water is still coming out, and the dog comes up, and he's biting the water. The dog is, like, biting at the water, and the camera slowly pans down into the grass and then deep into the grass, and then there are these bugs that are eating each other, like fighting and eating each other, and there's this underbelly. And then moments later, there's an ear found in a field, and that starts the story of the criminal underbelly of this, you know, Lumberton, this little town. That has that kind of Midwest nice thing going on for it. You know, it's a very nice little neighborhood, very nice little town, but it turns out that there's these, you know, horrible, horrible things going on.
Whenever you find the ear, that, you know, there's something, something bad has happened. When you find an ear, it's never good.
You know, another movie that's just a study in this is Hot Fuzz. If you've ever seen that. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Hot Fuzz is a great movie, and it's that same kind of thing, pristine, beautiful town, everything, you know, it's like Irvine, California, planned community kind of thing. Everything's gorgeous. People are competing to win the best roses and all this kind of stuff, but then there's something terribly wrong.
Yeah, Hot Fuzz and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies actually go very well together.
Yeah,
you could probably watch them on the same weekend or the same evening, and they would fit together. They're kind of, you know, spiritually separated at birth or something.
Well, cool. How are we doing on time there, Bill? We got about 3 minutes.
I was trying to avoid having you ask me that.
Well,
question.
I kept tapping my watch and you couldn't see me.
So. I was watching the clock. Ted, if you were to devise your own mashup, what would you put together? What would be a Ted Geese mashup movie?
Oh, now I'm on the spot. I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Personally, I would like to see Citizen Kane and the Big Lebowski brought together. I think that would be that would
that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah,
that'd be good. Yeah, you know, I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
I'd want to go with like Mutiny on the Bounty and Star Trek. You have like space mutiny.
Yeah, but
people being launched into space.
Here's where that doesn't work for me is that the space movies, like the Star Trek movies especially, all are built on those nautical themes.
Yeah.
You know, the captain, the bridge. You need something disparate. Not those are connected.
I guess, well, okay, you know, you can so maroon someone on a planet somewhere.
But that always happens.
Yeah,
and then
does.
They get beamed up and they get.
Yeah, I guess it's been done.
This is the interesting thing. Okay, so this is what you can do then. Like with something like Star Trek, Star Trek's a good example because there's so much of it that's been made that you could come out with a Star Trek film that was essentially a romantic comedy.
Oh. Now we're talking.
That's set in the Star Trek universe with characters that you know.
Sort of when Harry met Sally and Star Trek. That would work.
You had a little element of that in Galaxy Quest, though.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, you know, maybe I think Ted may have alluded to the formula beginning. Think of what she wants to watch and what he wants to watch and bring those together.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Ted? We're pretty much out of time. Pastor Ted Geese, thanks for being with us. I want to take us out with one more clip from Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Instead of music. But hey, thanks for being with us, Ted.
Hey, thanks.
All right, here we go. We'll catch you next time on The God Whisperers.
I must confess, Mrs. Bennett, the fairest wifely choices be right here in this room. I declare that I am enchanted by your daughter Jane and request to speak to her alone, if I may.
Oh, dear, Parson. I'm afraid Jane is already spoken for. We expect a serious proposal imminently.
Oh, fuddle.
But Liz is quite available. And almost as fair as Jane.
Is there absolutely no negotiating over Jane?
The early bird catches the worm, Mr. Collins.
Oh, indeed.
Be mindful of your talent for the delicate compliment, sir.
Oh, no, yeah, why, yes. She is almost As fair as the other one. Splendid.
Jesus is a friend of mine.
Jesus is my friend.
Jesus is a friend of mine.
I have a friend in Jesus.
Jesus is a friend of mine.
Jesus is my friend.
Jesus is a friend of mine.
He taught me how to live my life as it should be. He taught me how to turn my cheek when people